뭐가 그렇게 바빠? 밥 먹고 한판 쳐야지.
니들끼리나 많이들 치세요. 나는 밥 먹고 국도국장 갑니다. 장거리.
야, 장거리 어디에?
전라도 광주. 지금 갔다가 오늘 통금 전에 다시 서울로 와야 한다고.
이 새끼, 건수 하나 제대로 물었네. 얼마나 준다디?
10만 원.
10만 원? 아니, 어떤 후보가 하루에 택시비를 10만 원이나 준대?
외국 후보다.
어, 네 영어 다 할 줄 아나?
Of course. 내가 또 어릴 때 미국 무대 근처에서 살았잖냐.
아이씨, 여기는 팁도 주던데 10만 원에 팁까지 하면. 아, 너도 외국물 좀 먹었잖아. 저 정도는 할 수 있는 거 아니야?
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Retro Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to ask his landlord for a loan to pay rent, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well, thanks. I try at every opportunity to avoid talking to my landlord. So. maybe you missed the mark on this one, buddy.
You just moved recently. Is your new landlord any... Are they decent?
I don't know. To be determined.
Yeah.
They'll happily accept my money.
All of them will. Yep. Well, welcome back to the podcast, everyone. This is the show where every week Perk and I review a film connected to the last one we watched. If you like our show, we post pretty much every Friday on podcast services and YouTube. We also have a TikTok page where we post little clips from the show so you can watch those and get a little taste of what we're going to be talking about during the week. But... yeah, tell your friends about our show and come watch movies with us. Last week, we reviewed Parasite, the Paramount Korean film. And our connection to this week was the mom in Parasite, Lee Jong-un, to a taxi driver. She played the wife of the taxi driver they hung out with and like stayed with.
That's right.
In Gwangju. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Perk, why don't you intro this movie for us?
Yeah, all right. So a taxi driver, not to be... misunderstood with taxi driver, is a 2017 joint directed by Hun Jung, starring Song Kang-ho, who was also in Parasite last week.
Yep.
And Thomas Kretschmann as the German reporter.
Mm-hmm.
It follows the story of a taxi driver who, through circumstances, finds his way... into carrying a reporter into a military quarantine zone in Korea in the 80s, where unbeknownst to the rest of Korea, the military were killing civilians in the streets. And yeah, we see the movie through the POV of the taxi driver himself.
Mm-hmm.
The fun facts I've got for this movie are not especially fun, and I'm going to touch on them later.
Yeah.
In discussion. So, that's what I got.
Why don't you just roll into your thoughts then, Perk? What did you think of A Taxi Driver?
I thought it was good. I thought it was a really compelling story, and it's one of those cool things that cinema does where you can learn about something that you have no idea about, like no experience, no prior knowledge of. And this is a portion of history that we... don't touch on in our schools over here. Mainly because I feel like in our history classes, we spent a lot of time going through all of the development of America and everything. And even in world history, we don't have a lot of world history, but even then it feels like we kind of just go up to like the 70s, the 80s. And then we kind of just stop, even though a whole lot of bad stuff has happened since then. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I really enjoyed this movie. Yeah, I'm the same where I had no idea this had happened in Korea. As you know, I didn't realize as recently as 1980 they had this like authoritarian regime. Because we talked about like North Korea a bit in school, but we don't talk about South Korea's progression of trying to get to democracy. And yeah, this is just a really, you know, sad point in history, but has a good resolution, thankfully. And I think why I like this movie so much is I just loved the POV we got. Like, this is not a typical type of person that you would see in a film like this. You know, we follow like a hero character, you know, we probably follow a reporter normally, but for this, it's just kind of, he's just a regular dude who gets brought in and has to kind of reconcile with what he's seeing. And, Yeah, I just thought it was really, really well done. It's not a perfect film, but I think it's very effective in what it was trying to do, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. It is wildly effective in portraying the message. And I agree with you. I think as kind of the POV character being the more average Joe taxi driver, it's more easy to relate to that character and kind of put ourselves in his shoes, rather than, a heroic reporter or something. There's a layer of separation there.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting too is the reporter isn't even that heroic, or he is, but when they ask him, and maybe it was lost translation, but they ask him like why he does it, and he's like, oh, money. I feel like he could have easily been portrayed as like, oh, I do it to save people. And that's what he ends up doing. But it was just interesting to get that characterization of him in that like small little scene. So I would have liked more characterization from him. I would have liked to have him to get more of an idea of who he was. And we kind of get that at the very, very, very end. But that's like one part of the movie I wish we gotten more of, just more of him as a person.
Yeah, so I think that line about him doing it for the money might have been a little tongue-in-cheek. Because from what everything we've been shown otherwise, it seems incredibly important for him to tell the story. But yeah. You're right, there's not a ton of development shown in his character. We'll just dive right in then. One of my things I'm conflicted about this movie is, and it's the same way with historical movies, biopics, all that, it's hard for me to parse out what's okay to take creative liberty on.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot in this movie where everything is believable, everything's well written, but we don't know this happened. We don't know these motivations because we don't know the taxi driver. In real life, at the end of the movie, we see in the video from the journalist or the reporter, he never saw the taxi driver again.
Yeah.
And neither did the crew making this film. And that just to I. Like, trying to not be ultra pedantic, but there are a few things that, digging into it a little bit, I found that, some things that were taken liberally from a creative standpoint. The taxi driver himself, he passed away of liver cancer 4 years after the events of the film.
I thought it was seven. I thought he died in 87.
84.
Oh, dang. Yeah.
And his we came to know this because after the movie came out, his son came forward with more information. He doesn't have a son in the movie, but he could have had the wife died.
Maybe this they turned the son to a daughter. They could have switched the gender,
which for the child doesn't have much development, so
yeah,
either way it's okay. Because when he got back from these events, he became an alcoholic, which probably didn't help in his liver cancer.
Honestly, understandable. Like, you see the stuff that they saw, like, yeah.
Right. So the team that came as well for the for recording, the reporter had a sound guy, so there's an entire person left out of the story, which makes the relationship more effective. Hard to argue with that. The picture is painted that this is the only team. But in reality, there were several publications who had reporters on the ground in Gwangju.
We saw the local guy, but yeah.
Yes, but no, like the AP was there, the New York Times was there. The taxi driver himself, was fluent in English. So I think that the student character, the student translator character, who plays a very important part in the movie, may have been at least in some part fabricated.
Yeah.
The taxi driver had been driving for the reporter for 5 years before They went to Gwangju together. On the way out at the end, they were able to pass through security under the pretense of business. There wasn't that powerful moment where the soldier, you know, turns a blind eye. There wasn't a car chase with the taxi drivers banding together. These are
That's one part. I'm like, this feels a bit
Hollywood, movie. Even though it's, you know, not Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean and it's still like I was okay with it because it shows like humanity of these people trying to help. Right. But yeah, I was like, I don't know if this actually happened.
So yeah, it's a tough one for me because these are all things that are pretty large events in the story that either didn't happen the way they said they did or didn't happen at all. But in the end, they just kind of they're embellishing to emphasize the message, and the message is the same. The message, it isn't hindered by these things. It's just, it's always, it's tricky for me when I see something and I'm like, oh, do they really have this mini taxi car chase? It kind of pulls you out of it a little bit. So yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of conflicted on all that, but what are your thoughts on kind of stretching the truth a little bit to make a more effective story?
So normally we've watched some movies on this podcast before that's similar kind of issues.
Definitely. And
I think normally I can be kind of a stickler for that stuff. But I feel like in this film, I feel like I care more if it's like, you know, like if the movie is about like this one hero and then you find out like things the hero didn't actually do. And it's like, okay, it was kind of weird that we're kind of glorifying. In this film, like, I don't feel like you're saying, it's not really about the taxi driver like it is, but it's more about what actually happened, which is true, and also about a regular person coming to terms with this. And I think that's a very relatable, you know, theme and message. And I don't think it, like you're saying, I don't think what they added takes away from that. Yeah, like the taxi car chase scene probably could have done without that. And maybe done something else to kind of show there. I mean, because we had just gotten the scene where they drove out into the road to rescue people, which I think was extremely powerful.
Yes.
But I think for this film, I don't mind it as much. And yeah, because to me, like, the most impactful thing is like seeing his progression of someone who is so desensitized at the beginning to like the protesters and be like, just fucking get out of here, go back to college. He's got like the cream to like prevent the tear gas and, you know, he's going to go about his business, be kind of a little bit selfish, to he has the chance to escape and he just like he comes to terms with, yeah, I can't, like, I have to do this and I can't look away from this anymore. I have to like acknowledge what's happening and do what I can. And even if that didn't happen exactly like that, like, that is so, I feel like, relatable in today's day and age when there's so many bad things happening in the world and we get desensitized to stuff very easily, that, you know, I'm okay with them dramatizing it, but to kind of drive that home.
Yeah, and to what you talked about with him coming around to the idea, that's another thing. The driver was aware of what was going on in Gwangju and was interested in the democratic ideals. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like a hoodwink because he had driven for the reporter for some years.
Right.
So he went into that willingly. But it gives a more relatable arc, when we get to go from point A to point B on his ideology. I think what's a hang up for me in this case is that, the story is told from the point of view of a person whose point of view we don't know.
Sure.
Cause he never saw the reporter again after the events of the film, and he never reported to anyone about his take on the events and what happened. So we know the second hand from the reporter.
Yeah.
And
if you know, you figure if they knew each other for 5 years, they probably talked a bit during maybe the drive back. I mean, I'm sure the reporter knows a good amount.
Right, but all of the familial life and all of his internal ideologies and stuff, we're kind of painting on a blank slate.
Yeah.
Which, and in fairness too, they made this movie, they may have never known that someone was going to come for, I'm sure they didn't know someone was going to come forward with the actual person. But yeah, it's just, it's a little odd that the full POV and the whole story, it's this man's story, but he never told his story. So
yeah,
that
yeah.
I think that's maybe where I'm hung up. But this is a really, like, kind of getting off track, but I really did like the movie. And I thought it was incredibly effective. And yeah, some things were embellished, but the reporter was with him for, you know, most of it, all the stuff in Guangzhou. So we at least we have one picture of the events, so we can kind of, you know, paint the in-between is I think what they went for. And I think they did so really smoothly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really just, a lot of like little things really worked for me a lot. Like, I really liked seeing like all the food and commenting about the food, and like when the woman, when they're first driving into Guangzhou, the woman gives him, it's like a rice ball type thing, and he's eating it on the roof. And then later when he's escaping, he is at a restaurant and the, you know, server gives him an extra thing to eat, and it's the same thing. And they don't do like a flashback, you know, they don't
hold your hand. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really appreciated that. Like when he's driving up to that stoplight and he's just slowly breaking down, and he asks like his daughter, like, what do I do? Like, that was just so powerful. And a lesser movie would have done flashbacks to, you know, people he had saw back then or all those things. And, everything felt very genuine. Again, except for like the Hollywood type stuff, but like all the emotional moments worked really well. Granted, I will say the college kid, you know, he was dying. Like, it still was effective. Like seeing him, you know, at the hospital after was, you know, really hit. But that was a bit too foreshadowed for
me.
I
think, you know, that's the way that a lot of these wartime movies go, where you see like a nice fun scene around a character, and you're like, well, he's gonna die.
Yeah.
Like that's how it's gonna go. And it's unfortunate, but you would think maybe in a true story, but yeah. So was the college kid the son of the other taxi driver?
No.
Okay. But his son also died, right?
I don't think so, because he was crying at the hospital, but I think he was just crying about everything that was happening. Because,
I thought that he was sitting next to his son. I thought that was the implication.
No, he was sitting next to the college kid.
Okay.
The reason why I don't think his young son died is because when Mr. Kim comes back and tries to find the reporter, he asks the taxi driver's wife, the woman from Parasite, is he? And I feel like she would be distraught if her young child just died.
Good point.
So I don't think that. I think just the texture was just distraught at, you know,
the college kid dying and everything that happened.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
That
ties a little bit more together for me. Because when the taxi driver said, come back with your daughter, we'll have a picnic with my son, I'm like, oh, his son's going to die.
Yeah.
That just seems that's where that's going to go. But
yeah.
No, they only had one child to kill off, important to the plot.
Yeah. I don't have too much more to say. It's really, really enjoyed me. I think I would highly recommend it to like pretty much anybody, because like we were saying, we didn't know about the story at all, and I don't know when I would have heard about it. And I think it's a really just great way to show what happened, but also just, like I said, showcase these themes that are incredibly relevant today.
I'm not done.
No,
you watch it.
Pop off King.
I think we kind of glossed over, but I think the acting in this movie is terrific.
Yeah.
I think Song Kang Ho as the main taxi driver is outstanding.
He's the GOAT.
And he really kills it. He has more to work with in this movie than Parasite. His role is a little smaller in Parasite, but, and I think he shines in that movie as well, but given so much time with just him in this movie, I think he does a really great job. I think he has a lot of like monologuing to himself, which it's a choice that I don't love, but like that's mainly early on.
Yeah, I mean the monologue where he's crying in
that's
the
great.
House tonight
yes.
was really, really, really good.
And the facial acting he does when he's seeing all these atrocities, that he's in perfect control. It's
yeah.
It's a masterful performance. I think the German doesn't have a ton to do, but he does a good job. He nails it. And then all the other Guangzhou citizens, I think, have just turned in strong performances.
Yeah, I mean, the main taxi driver that they stay with, I thought was phenomenal. He was like, he was so good, and he really hit me a lot with his performance.
And then the only other thing I really wanted to comment on, which actually this is, I know we just spent 20 minutes talking about how, you know, taking liberty with the truth is or isn't an issue. At the end of the day, just looking at this as a movie, it's a great movie, other than I think that it has really poor pacing. Mm. I think that some scenes are incredibly long, some that need to be. I think the beginning of the movie is really long with some of those monologues. Getting him to the driver, or getting him to the reporter to then drive, I think is, it maybe just a smidge too long. Some other things feel a little rushed. And then the scene of the atrocity when they actually, when he comes back for the like final filming and then to get the reporter, is very, very long. I think it works that it is. I think similar, it reminded me a little bit of the end of Do the Right Thing, where we really stretch out that moment to allow you to sit with it, to allow you to understand what's going on. I think there's maybe just a little too much, because we have a lot of that. And then our this is another thing for me. The driver leaves, which I'm sure actually happened. And then there's quite a bit of movie that happens. And then he comes back. And that really just kind of put the foot down on the brake pedal for the momentum of the movie for me. And then we come back and there's some more long scenes of anguish, which are very important and really, really well done. I think the direction in this movie is also fantastic.
Yeah.
But the pacing is kind of all over the place, and it speeds up and slows down a lot. So I think that's kind of really the only like technical weakness I saw in this one.
Yeah, I would agree. Also, I noticed that it didn't bother me that much, but yeah, I would agree. The pacing isn't super consistent, but yeah, and I'll second what you said on the atrocities scenes, like the riot scenes, are just like, they don't pull punches, and nor should they, you know, like it's incredibly brutal and like horrible to watch. And yeah, I think they are drawn out, but intentionally so. And I think it works. So yeah, I highly recommend this movie. I was thinking of like similar films. The only thing I think of as like kind of similar is Defy Bloods. You know, kind of around historical moment, and you know, it's a little bit more actiony, but you know, I thought of it a little bit.
Yeah, there's not much I could compare. I just, a movie that came to mind, although it's not especially close in parallel, is Argo, Ben Affleck has to go break out hostages as a movie team. Just kind of felt almost like a similar setting rather than too much of a similar movie.
But sure. Sure. Yeah. That's what came to mind. Yeah.
And I already mentioned, I felt a parallel with Do the Right Thing on the, atrocity being given room to breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. That is our review of A Taxi Driver. Make time for it. This is a film worth watching.
Yes, it is.
Before we talk about what we're watching next week, it's time for some bonus reviews. And Perk and I were able to see a movie together this week.
It was cute.
We went and saw Spirited Away. Remember, we was there as well, but yeah, we can forget about him. It was my first time seeing it. And Perk, you've seen it before, right?
So this is another one like Howl's Moving Castle, where I think I watched it a long time ago, mainly because like as a child, there are some images in these movies that kind of get emblazoned on your brain. So Ubaba absolutely is like, I was like, have I seen this movie? And then I saw her and I'm like, yeah, Yeah, I have. And the bird with her face too.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
These are memory images that are kind of a little bit deeper because they're probably traumatizing as a child.
Yeah. So like I said, my first time watching it, and I've been kind of like, not like down on the Miyazaki movies, but they haven't been as like, they haven't lived up to the hype as much as when I've been watching them lately, you know, as I've been going through them very slowly. And, you know, Spirited Away, a lot of people will say is their favorite one. So I was excited for this one. And this one, I think, lived up to the expectation. I really, really enjoyed this movie. And the thing that stands out with this one and Totoro in particular is that, like, Miyazaki knows how to do believable children as characters. And Chihiro, right, is the main?
Chihiro, yep.
Chihiro is just so believable in this entire film, and she's just an amazing character to follow. In this truly nightmare scenario, like, what happens to her is horrifying, and I just really appreciated that they took a moment for her to just, like, at once the craziness kind of settles down and she, like, gets the job, she, like, just needs to cry for a bit because, like, this is fucked. Some surprises. I was surprised at how little No Face actually mattered to, like, the plot of this movie. Based on every image you see of Spirited Away, No Face is in there. Mm-hmm. And he actually doesn't have a whole lot of, like, plot relevance. So that was kind of surprising. And then also, I was expecting more shocking imagery. Not that there isn't shocking imagery, but compared to, like, Mononoke, that movie, there's some really fucked up shit in there. I was expecting a little bit more, like, even more twisted stuff. And so I guess I'm thankful it wasn't as disturbing as I expect this movie to be. But, yeah, just as like an allegory for, you know, kind of growing up and moving to a new place and all that. Like, this movie is just outstanding and I really enjoyed it.
Yes, I agree. I loved it. I think this, I mean, of the Ghibli movies I've seen recently, this is easily number one. I was obsessed. I was enthralled the entire time. I love everything. I love the animation. It's stunning. Yeah. The story is really cool and creative and not something I've seen. The characters are really cool and wacky and all over the place and believable as random spirits. This is just about the best world building I've ever seen in a movie. In the little bathhouse, it's just it's whole world, and it's so well built, well put together,
and it's like functional. Like I really like how like you see Kamaji's the boiler room, and how they have to like call the water and all that stuff. Like that is just, I love that kind of stuff.
And the way that the way that this movie works thematically is so great. There's so much to pick into and relate to, and everyone can kind of find something to grab onto. Part of that is because Chihiro is a perfect POV character, because it's almost not really about her. It's more like about us.
Just, yeah.
And, you know, us being her. And the movie, to me, my biggest takeaway is it's like, it's a movie about what happens between, like you're stuck between, because the movie starts off, she's moving. She's in between like the life she knows and the unknown, and she works her way through that in the spirit world. And so much of this movie is going from point A to point B. Like, we don't just glance over, we don't just see Chihiro teleport from the bathhouse down to the boiler room. We get to be with her that entire time when she goes. We don't see her when she sees Haku fly up into the top floor. We don't just see her running up some stairs into that room. We see her go around the building and climb.
Yeah.
We don't just, by the way, this scene, oh my. We don't just see her hop on a train and then get off in Swamp Bottoms.
Mm-hmm.
We're just there. We're there with them in the space between. And it's such an eerie feeling, such a relatable, for people who have moved. I mean, I think in the movie she's 10. I was younger than that when I moved, but it's like, it's something that everyone kind of knows a little bit. The unease, the unsureness of what's next. And the moments in between are so drawn out in like the best way possible, just letting you kind of live in the in-between and appreciate it. I'm sorry, I'm geeking, but I freaking love this movie.
Yeah, no, it's really fantastic. And, like, it's also just got to say that tinge of sadness to it, right? Because, like, her parents yes. are, like, not horrible parents. They're just kind of shitty, you know? And they just don't really listen to or respect her. And, like, you know, they start out that way and they end that way because they don't know what happened. And she goes through all this effort to get it back and stuff. And that's also feels very relatable as a kid of, like, you're just not really respected as a person and you just yeah. have to go along with whatever. And yeah, I don't know how Miyazaki can just capture the feeling of being a child so well. And it's not even just like the characterization. It's like, and this in Totoro too, it's like their movements are just like, mm-hmm. so they feel so real. He gets all the little ticks and all this stuff. Like it's incredible.
No, you're right. There are just some little things that you just never see in other places. It's like, when Chihiro nicely asks the soot spirits to like grab her shoes.
Mm-hmm.
She puts on the shoes and then she stands up and kicks her toe a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've all done that, but I've never mm-hmm. seen it in a movie.
Yeah.
It's just, the attention to detail.
For her, like, so trying cool. to go down the big stairs to the boiler room for the first time. Yeah. He's, like, sitting and like, trying to slide. Sitting and
shuffling. Yeah. It's yeah. just, I definitely agree with you on what you're saying with the way that he knows just kind of how kids are.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I maybe read, like, a trivia on Totoro. Like, he would just, like, observe. I think grandkids or his own kids, he just observed them very carefully and, you know, kind of take notes and stuff. And it pays off because, yeah, it just feels so realistic.
Yeah, I can't think of many other, like, because a lot of times the children are taken for granted, but the most recent one that comes to mind, like Petite Mama, kind of has the same thing where the movie revolves around two kids and they kind of just, they feel like two kids.
Yeah. 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 No, and we watched the dub, which I, you know, lamented, but it was good. It was a solid dub. And I do want to watch the sub at some point just to see if there's any differences and see the performances, but dub was very good. There was a lot of people I recognized their voice, looked up after, and they were just kind of like in a random, you know, sure. show I'd seen before. But
did you look up who voiced Haku? That one sounded super familiar.
I didn't. I know that. Oh, no, it was, yes, Haku. I knew Haku from, he plays the Flash in Young Justice.
And okay.
I love that show, so that's where I knew him from. But he's that voice actor's been in a ton of stuff. Big-time
voice actor. Yeah, I'd recognize him from, you know, it's just a voice I've heard over the years.
Yeah, and Chihiro is the same woman who plays Lilo in Stitch.
No way!
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome! Yeah, yeah. Her voice was perfect for that, absolutely.
Yeah, it was great. So, yeah, Spirited Away. Shocker, it's a great movie.
Yeah, who would have thought? We're the first podcast ever to enjoy Spirited Away, I'm sure of it.
Before I throw it to you, Perk, I just got a quick little, I don't know, mini review. I finished the new Spider-Man 2 game.
Nice.
Story was pretty good. It's a pretty standard Spider-Man story. Nothing like really blew my socks off. Main villains are Kraven, the Hunter, and Venom. The Venom stuff always is, you know, it's risky. it's risky to not be cringy, you know, and I think they mostly pulled it off. But I actually really liked Kraven's characterization. He was very intimidating and because he can be kind of like a jokey villain sometimes. And we're getting that Aaron Taylor Johnson Kraven movie coming out soon.
Oh, God, which will be right.
something. But no, I thought he was really good. And getting the dual protagonists of both Peter Parker and Miles Morales together was really fun, and they kind of have their own arcs they're going on. And I think also Peter and Mary Jane's relationship in this one was more fleshed out and more interesting. So yeah, I mean, yeah, nothing like super crazy, pretty standard Spider-Man stuff, but very satisfying and fun to watch. So if you like Spider-Man, you'd like Spider-Man video games because they're great. Perk, what'd you watch this week?
So I guess it's a tradition now because I watched this movie last Halloween. it came out last Halloween, but Trick or Treat Scooby-Doo, which is an animated Scooby-Doo entry that came out in 2022, and I watched it around the same time, Halloween of last year. It's just fun. It's not good. It's not bad. super forgettable, incredibly throwaway, but it's just kind of fun.
Yeah.
You just kind of hang out with the gang. They have good characterization. Like, Daphne is not just the damsel, and Velma is just canonically gay, but it's not a huge topic. She just kind of has the hots for the villain, and that's fine. It's good. Villain is pretty cool. The side characters are right. It's pretty predictable on what's going on, but it's like 80 minutes. You know?
It's, you're in, you're out, having a good
time.
Yeah,
it's a great thing to just throw on in the background, or, you know, maybe use some performance enhancing substances and veg out on the couch and just it's fun, dude. Trick or treat Scooby-Doo. It's super mid and I love it.
There you go. It's a new Halloween tradition in the Perkins household.
It might be, dude. It's like, that's two in a row. It's something.
Two's a streak.
Maybe it's just because I've been watching a lot of really long and heavy foreign language films, and I just needed some garbage.
Well, Perk, that's a great segue, because our film for next week, which you chose, all right, you brought this on yourself.
I did.
Is Decision to Leave. This was came out in 2022, right?
I think end of last year.
Yeah.
So end of 2022.
And pretty critically acclaimed, so we'll be watching that next week. Our connection is Seo Hyun Woo, who played one of the security officers in A Taxi Driver. Don't know which one, but, you know, there's a lot of them. But he's also in Decision to Leave, and that is streaming on Mubi. If you subscribe to that, you can probably get a free trial, or it's also rentable on Amazon Prime. Decision to Leave next week. But until then, thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye-bye.